again, we'd like to turn to the book of Daniel, chapter 11. Verse 32. In this verse, we have two groups of people, such as do wickedly against the covenant, shall be corrupt by flatteries. That's one group. And the other group is but the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. This will be Thriving in Babylonian Times, Part 2. But in the book of Daniel, chapter 1, verse 6, we're introduced to four Hebrew men. In 2 Kings 24, verses 12 through 14, we have the record of Nebuchadnezzar going into Jerusalem and carrying away captive 10,000 men. And here in Daniel 1:6, we're told of four of these individuals. Their Hebrew names were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And of course, their names were changed to Belteshazzar, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But these four individuals would fall under the second part of Daniel 11, verse 32, the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. These men, again, they're not the only four that were faithful in Babylon, but it's the four that Daniel focuses upon. They illustrate the lives that God's people can and should live in the midst of Babylon. Now, here we are today, and many who profess to be the people of God, in truth, are more accepting of the ways of a culture of godlessness than they are God's ways, and who are more identified in the first half of Daniel 11:32 than the second half. But these four men, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they were a remnant generation. That's what we are. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm afraid that many seem to think that that's a curse, to be a remnant, a small part. And these men, and whoever else it was that stood with them, were a remnant generation. And they serve as an example and a testimony to you and I that we can rise and live above Babylon. You look at Babylon, you look at the Babylonian captivity, and what we're faced with today is really a larger scale than the Babylon that we read of in the Old Testament. The thinking, the reasoning, the ways, the doctrine, the philosophies, the speech, the methods, the aspirations, the idols, and the pursuits of our world, our society, our culture, are evil. They are atheistic in nature. So it was here in Babylon. But these four men are proof positive that we do not have to be swallowed up and taken in by all the evil ways of Babylon. They are proof positive that we do not have to be identified, even though we may live in Babylon. We do not have to be identified with Babylon. For these Jewish captives to live in this place called Babylon and to be exposed every single day to the ways of Babylon, this, of course, would prove to be a very trying time, a very difficult time. Certainly, it was a very threatening time to their own lives, a very dangerous time. Certainly, there were many challenges in Babylon, and it was a very pressing and urgent situation. And we need to, if there is a need today, it is a need to realize the urgency of the situation, and I don't believe there are very many who have a clue concerning the urgency of the situation that we're in. And it'll always be challenging for God's people. It'll always be difficult for the children of God. But this situation in Babylon also proved to be an opportunity for these Jewish captives, 10,000 of them, to stand for God. They now had an opportunity to stand in a way that they didn't have before. They had an opportunity to show forth God in their lives, such has always been the case with God's people. We always have the opportunity to stand for God. We may not always take it, but the opportunity is always there. And we always have opportunity to show forth God in our lives. That's always been the case. Though we live in Babylon, and though it is a very trying time and a very difficult time, we have opportunity to be faithful to God. We have opportunity to show forth God. And we want to consider three main points concerning these individuals. The first point, we have several subpoints, but the first point is that these four individuals, and this is how you thrive in Babylonian times, these four individuals, and again there were others, but these individuals were deeply rooted in God. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were connected. They were linked in heart to God. They were fixed and firmly established in God. They had a root system. And their root system did not go to Babylon. Their root system went to God. This fact is declared all through the book of Daniel. It is a fact that they themselves openly declared. And it is one that was recognizable by the Babylonians, that these men had a connection, had a relationship with the Lord. You cannot thrive in Babylon without that. Now, concerning the three, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, it was noticed that in spite of a decree being established, Daniel 3 verses 1 through 6, that everyone was to bow to this image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up, it was noticed by others that these three Hebrews, it says in Daniel 3 and verse 12, they reported to Nebuchadnezzar concerning these three men, they serve not thy gods. That was recognized by the Babylonians. These men do not serve your gods, nor worship the golden image that thou hast set up. So it was recognized that these individuals did not serve the gods of Babylon. In Daniel 3 and verse 17, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they are standing before Nebuchadnezzar under the threat of being cast into the burning fiery furnace for not bowing. And they said there in Daniel 3 and verse 17, our God, our God. They are declaring, Nebuchadnezzar, we have a connection with God. We have no connection to your gods, but we have a connection to God. Our God whom we serve. They boldly declared a connection. They boldly declared an association between them and God. And after they were cast into the furnace for non-compliance, and after they were miraculously sustained by God, Nebuchadnezzar, in Daniel 3 and verse 28, declared concerning them that they did not serve nor worship any god except their own God. So there's a connection, and the connection was noticed. Again, the fact that they had a connection to God was recognized by the Babylonians. Living today, if you have a personal connection to God, that connection is real in your life, that cannot help but be noticed by the Babylonians because of the stark difference between Babylon and God. In Daniel 6 and verse 5, the men who were trying to entrap Daniel made reference to the law of his God. They said, we're not going to find fault in Daniel unless we find it in the law of his God. His God. They recognized again that he had a connection with God. In Daniel 6, verses 10 and 11, Daniel is seen praying before his God. Twice it is stated there, before his God. Again, there is a connection between Daniel and God. In Daniel chapter 6 and verse 16, the king spake, this would be Darius, and said unto Daniel, thy God, thy God. Again, there was a recognition that they had a connection with God. In Daniel 6 and verse 20, again, Darius speaking to Daniel said, thy God, thy God. There was a recognized connection. In Daniel 6 verse 22, Daniel declared before Darius, my God, my God. In Daniel 6 verse 23, we read concerning Daniel, he believed in his God. In Daniel 6 and verse 26, Darius makes reference to the God of Daniel. Again, there was a recognized connection. The people of Babylon, the enemies of God, were forced to recognize they have a different God than we do. They serve a different God than we do. Daniel 9, verse 4, Daniel spoke of the Lord, my God. In Daniel chapter 9, verses 18 through verse 20, He declares, "My God, my God." In our text, in Daniel 11, verse 32, the people that do know their God, their God. So these men, four, who spiritually thrived in Babylon, had a different connection and root system than those of Babylon. Their roots went all the way to God. They have a different root system than the first part of Daniel 11, verse 32. These men know their God. They are rooted to God. I don't care how determined you are to thrive in Babylon. I'm telling you, if you are not rooted to God, if there is not a root system that goes to God, you will not thrive. You will not make it. You will be swallowed up by Babylon. You can be raised in the church. You can agree with the church covenant, the statement of faith. You can agree with all of those things. But the only way that you will spiritually thrive in Babylon, and there aren't many thriving in Babylon today, is that you have to have a root system that goes back to God. In order to spiritually thrive in Babylon, there must be a personal connection, a coupling with God. All the attempts that we looked at this morning to get these four men and others to think like Babylonians, and all the influence of Babylon all around them, could not uproot them from God. They could not, their roots went so deep, so fastened to God, that they could not be uprooted. We need to check our root system. Each one of us individually need to check our roots. Are they connected to God? Or do we have a root system that goes down into Babylon? This is very important. Where is our root system? Concerning this fact that these men were deeply and firmly rooted in God, notice that these men had a personal conviction concerning God. These things go hand in hand. If you are deeply rooted to God, you will have personal convictions concerning God. And the more you are rooted, the deeper the conviction, the deeper the conviction, the deeper the roots go. They work together. Notice in Daniel chapter 2, verses 20 through 22, Daniel declared some truths concerning God in these verses. Daniel, verse 20, answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are His." That was his conviction. Nothing could uproot him from that. Those 3 years that they spent learning the language of the Chaldeans and the science and the philosophy, none of those things, none of that indoctrination, lessened his conviction, for with God is wisdom and might. Nothing changed that. And He changeth the times and the seasons. He's talking about the sovereignty of God now. This was his conviction. He went on to say, "He removeth kings, and He setteth up kings." This was his conviction. "He giveth wisdom unto the wise, and knowledge to them that know understanding." That is, if any are wise, God gave it to them. If any understand or have knowledge, it's God that gave it to them. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. Daniel had a personal conviction concerning the person of God. He declared in Daniel 2 and verse 28, in the presence of Nebuchadnezzar, he said, "But there is a God in heaven." And can you just imagine as these men for 3 years are being indoctrinated by the Chaldeans, and they're thinking in their minds, and perhaps they talk back to the Chaldeans and said, "You know, there is a God in the heavens. And you know, this God, He brings down nations and He sets up nations. He brings down kings and He sets up kings. You say this, but I'm telling you, there is a God in heaven." They were deeply rooted to God, and they had a conviction concerning God. In Daniel 3 and verse 17, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, while being threatened with their lives by Nebuchadnezzar, declared, "Our God whom we serve is able." He is able. He is able. That was their conviction. These were not just words. These were not just platitudes. This was real. Our God is able. In Daniel 5 and verse 18, Daniel standing before wicked Belshazzar. Nebuchadnezzar's gone. Belshazzar's the king. And he referred to God. And as Daniel declared in the presence of Belshazzar that He is the Most High God. That was his conviction. And he declared his conviction. He said in Daniel 5 verse 21 before Belshazzar, "The Most High God." He's talking about Nebuchadnezzar. He's talking about Nebuchadnezzar's experience. And he says, "The Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that He appointed over it whomsoever He will." There again is that sovereignty of God. Daniel 5 verse 23. He spoke of the Lord of heaven. So you see, these men had a root system that went to God. And they had a conviction concerning God. We need convictions. But our number one conviction needs to be concerning the person of God, who God is. That needs to be our number one conviction. And all other convictions will flow from that. A lot of people have convictions, but they don't have the conviction that God is God. And then I'm here to tell you, your other convictions aren't going to do you a whole lot of good. Concerning the fact that these men were deeply and firmly rooted in God, they noticeably lived their lives under God. This was in the midst of Babylon. God to them was not merely a topic of conversation. He was a living reality in their lives. I believe during those 3 years that there was that attempt to indoctrinate them, to brainwash them, to transform them into agents of Babylon. God was real. God was real to them. They were God conscious during that time. And throughout the 70 years of Babylonian captivity, they were conscious of God. They got up in the morning, they were conscious of God. They went through the day, they were conscious of God. They went to bed at night, they were conscious of God. And then it started all over the next day, and it went on for 70 years. And they thrived in Babylon. We read in Daniel 2 and verse 19 concerning Daniel. Daniel blessed the God of heaven. That is, he was living his life unto God. Daniel blessed, Daniel praised the God of heaven. And in Daniel 2 and verse 23, we hear Daniel say, "I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers." In chapter 3, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are seen trusting. and leaning entirely upon God, serving and worshiping God in the midst of a very threatening situation. It was when you hear the sound of the music, everyone is to bow to this very impressive image to the carnal mind. And I believe there are others that did not bow, but we're told of these three. They did not bow. They stood there. And it was very obvious that they weren't bowing. It was very obvious that they weren't bowing. They could have pretended to drop something and bend down to pick it up to make people think they were bowing. They didn't play that game. They stood there erect. And it was very manifest. These men are not bowing to the same God, same gods that we are bowing to. It ought to always be manifest in the life of a child of God. They're not bowing to the Babylonian idols. They're not bowing. That ought to be recognized in each of our lives. Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 3, verse 28, referring to them, said they did not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Oh, that would be our testimony. They do not serve or worship any of our gods. They only serve and worship their God. That ought to be our testimony. And this, again, is a time when all around them, the masses were bowing and worshiping a Babylonian idol. Nowadays, people's reasoning is so warped and twisted, they begin to think things like, well, you know, I probably ought to bow because that'll give me opportunity to talk to this fellow over here. Why should he listen? You're no different than he is. What'll give you the opportunity to talk to him is that you stand there and do just the opposite of what he's doing. Now you can talk to him. Oh, but we've got to learn to live, learn where they live. You can learn that. Just look around. You don't have to participate. Just open your eyes. It's not hard to figure out. In Daniel 6, verses 10 and 11, in a time when it was against the law to pray, Daniel continued his habit of prayer. And Darius said in Daniel 6, verse 16, that he served God continually. And in chapter 6, verse 20, he referred to him as the servant of the living God. And again in chapter 6, verse 20, whom thou servest continually. So these are men who manifestly served God, lived under God, and was recognized by the Babylonians. By the time you get to Daniel chapter 9, nearly 70 years into the captivity, and there's Daniel, 70 years away from home, 70 years surrounded by heathen idols and heathen worship and heathen ways and heathen talk. 70 years, and there is Daniel still looking toward God. After 70 years, he's still a man of prayer. He's still seeking God. He's still in fellowship with God. Notice in Daniel 9, verse 3 and 4, and I set my face unto the Lord God. 70 years, and Daniel still sets his face unto God. And he did that every day for 70 years. This was not just a one-time occasion. He did this all the time. This was his life, to seek by prayer and supplications with fasting and sackcloth and ashes. And I prayed unto the Lord my God and made my confession and said, O Lord, the great and dreadful God. 70 years, and he still living under God. Notice verse 20. And while I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel and presenting my supplication before the Lord God for the holy, before the Lord my God for the holy mountain of my God, speaking of Jerusalem. Yea, while I was doing this, while I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me about the time of the evening oblation. And he informed me and talked with me. You see, there was contact with heaven. 70 years living in Babylon, and Daniel still maintained contact with heaven. This goes back to that root system. The root system goes all the way to God. And there he is, talking with God, fellowshipping with God, having contact with heaven, still desiring to do everything for the glory of God. He said in verse 19, O Lord, hear. O Lord, forgive. O Lord, hearken. And do not defer. And defer not for thine own sake. For thine own sake. For thy own glory. These men living in a corrupt and twisted and godless society of Babylon, amid all the allurements and amid all the enticements, had a personal connection to God, had convictions concerning God, and God was a manifest part in their daily life, and nothing in Babylon could change this. Nothing could uproot them. They that be strong, they that know their God, shall be strong. So there you have these men, living in a God-despising culture, a very secular culture, a pluralistic society with many gods. And yet, they maintained a reverence for God. They maintained a stirring in their heart for God. They maintained a passion for the Lord. They remained separate from Babylon. They remain clean and holy and right and unshakable and valiant for God. And they did this in the midst of Babylon. The reason that many of God's people are spellbound by the world and its pursuits and absorbed and drawn to the ways and the reasonings of the world, and the reason that many of God's people are more identified with Babylon than they are with Jesus Christ, and the reason that they have embraced the ways of Babylon and the ideas of Babylon and the philosophies of Babylon, and the reason their minds have become clouded with the carnal reasonings of Babylon, and the reason for their lack of a clear distinction between themselves and Babylon. Again, these men had a clear distinction between themselves and Babylon. Is a lack of conviction concerning who God is. So if we're going to thrive in Babylon, we need to be deeply rooted in God. The more you live under God, the more you experience God, the deeper your root system goes. The more you make God a side issue, put God on a shelf, just go your merry way and oblivious, the more you become rooted in Babylon. And you will fall. And you will become, if you haven't already, an agent of Babylon. But it doesn't have to be that way if we're rooted to God. Secondly, these individuals realized that there was a direct conflict between Babylon and God. In the book of Daniel, there are two lifestyles, Babylonian and thus saith the Lord. Same two lifestyles still exist today. There was secularism and spirituality. These two distinct lifestyles in Babylon and today are in fierce contention with each other. There is such a wide divide between these two lifestyles that they are absolutely incompatible. Absolutely incompatible. And Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they knew this. The truth is, they understood the truth of 2 Corinthians 6, verses 14 through 18 before 2 Corinthians 6, verses 14 through 18 were put on paper. They understood the truth of 1 John 2, 15 through 17 before 1 John 2, 15 through 17 was ever put on paper. These men knew. These men were absolutely certain, and they understood that the ways, the philosophies, the reasonings, the manners, the pursuits of Babylon were hateful and hostile toward God and were opposed and against God. They were unlike God, and that the society and culture of Babylon was absolutely incompatible with the ways and with the will of God. They knew with absolute certainty that the ways of Babylon ran counter to and challenged commitment, devotion, and loyalty and service to God. They knew this. There was no doubt in their mind. These were not men who were trying to create some kind of balance between Babylon and God. These were not men who were trying to serve Babylon and God, somehow trying to fit both into their lives. They realized that there was such a difference, it was one or the other. And so it is today. You cannot serve two masters. It's Babylon or God. And God's people, it is time. It is time for God's people to be honest enough and stand up and declare, which is it? Babylon or God? And if it's Babylon, do us all a favor and get out of the way. But we need to determine. But you see, most people are not convinced that these two lifestyles are absolutely incompatible. They're not convinced of that. And the reason they're not convinced of that is an insufficient root system. Because part of their roots go to Babylon. So once again, we come back to that root system. These men realized that Babylonian society and culture was in direct conflict to God. Direct conflict to the ways of God. And so, we must realize the same thing. That there's these two lifestyles, and they're absolutely incompatible. Absolutely incompatible. No use trying. If you believe what Jesus said, there's no use even trying serving two masters. He said it can't be done. You love the one, you hate the other. Why is that? Well, isn't there somewhere in between this love and hate? No. Because they're incompatible. There's no compatibility. God's people need that conviction today. There aren't very many with that conviction today. That these two lifestyles are absolutely incompatible. That's why when people say, you know, it's the 21st century, they don't get it. They think somehow that we can balance these two lifestyles. They are incompatible. Thirdly and lastly, these individuals had defined their purpose in life. Daniel 1 verse 8, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself, that he would not degrade, contaminate, and dishonor himself. Now it says that Daniel purposed, and certainly he did, but I believe also Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and Ezekiel, and others had the same purpose. To purpose, you purpose to do something. That means you make that your intention. It's your aim in life. It's your object. Your object. See, this is why there's so much clutter in our lives, because we have more than one aim, we have more than one object, and that fills our lives with Babylonian clutter. To purpose is to have a goal. The goal here is not to defile themselves with Babylon, it is to have an ambition. It is determination. It is commitment. Now, in order to purpose something, there's a prerequisite to that. You have to define what is the most important matter in your life. And it's time that God's people were called upon to define the most important matter in their life. Because you will not have this purpose unless it's the most important thing in your life. Now, to define the most important thing in our life requires honesty. It requires self-awareness. Therefore, most people are never going to define properly what's most important in their life. Purpose is based upon what we associate and connect with what we most identify with. What is it that we are most associated with in our life? Some would think there's no problem with saying family. Oh, there's a huge problem with that. There's a huge problem with that. Anything other than God is a problem. Anything other than God is a wrong purpose in our lives. Doesn't mean that there can't be other things of importance. We're talking about what is most important. What is most important. So in other words, purpose is based upon a deep-seated conviction and realization, whatever it is that we purpose to do, that this is worthwhile. That this is worthwhile. You purpose to do something tomorrow. You have convinced yourself that this is worthwhile. Whatever it is. That's part of purpose. You have the conviction, you have the realization this is worthwhile. So if we're going to have this God purpose, we must come to the realization that God being number one priority is worthwhile. That standing erect and refusing to bow down to Babylonian idols while all others are bowing, it's worthwhile. That it is worthwhile to be cast into the furnace or to be cast into the lion's den. I am willing to pay that cost, is what they're saying. I know, again, Jesus said, count the cost. Count the cost. People will say, I'm going to go and I'm going to serve God with all my life. And their family begins to forsake them. And immediately, they begin to have doubts. And they begin to try this balancing act. There was a failure to count the cost. Realize today that if you are determined to serve God, it may cost you your family. Count the cost. Are you willing to pay that cost? You say, Brother Dan, I'm not willing to go there. Then you're not willing to go all the way with God. You need to realize that about yourself. As soon as you say, I'm not willing to forsake my son or my daughter or my mother or my father or whoever. I'm not willing to do that. I can't do that. Then it's not worthwhile to you. This is something that is so worthwhile that no matter what it costs, doesn't change our purpose. So these men purposed. They defined their purpose. And we need to do that. That's where we need to start. We need to define our purpose. And once we have defined our purpose, we need to announce it. We need to declare our purpose. And once you have declared your purpose, it's going to be tested. It's going to be tested. Once you have declared it, and it is tested, these four men stood by it. They stood by it. We have defined our purpose. We have declared our purpose. And we are standing by. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah said to Nebuchadnezzar, we will not bow. We will not bow. Nebuchadnezzar said, I want to give you a little bit more time to think upon this. They said, Nebuchadnezzar, we don't need any more time. If you give us another 2 hours, the answer's still going to be the same. We will not bow to your idols. We have declared our purpose. God's people need to do that. Many aren't willing to do that because it might cost them a family member, it might cost them a job, it might cost them a position in the community or whatever. You need to define your purpose. If you believe that your purpose on this earth is to just have fun and enjoy life, if you believe that's your purpose, then that's the way you will live your life. If you believe, I am put here on purpose, with a purpose, by God, and I have one purpose, and that is to serve God, you will stand. You will not bend, you will not bow. And believe it or not, you will not burn, as we see with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So there they are, in a land that was hostile to their faith. Not only living in evil days and in an evil place, but they lived in the very midst of evil. But none of those things changed or broke the purpose that was in their heart, because their purpose is rooted to God. In fact, being surrounded by Babylon only strengthened their purpose. As we see the wickedness growing all around us today, that ought to strengthen our purpose. We ought to be more resolved than we were yesterday. That ought to strengthen our purpose. These purpose that they would not be blinded, Before they sat down with those Chaldeans in the schools of the Chaldeans, they had already purposed, we're not going to be blinded by their philosophies. We're not going to be hypnotized by this society. We're not going to be hypnotized by this culture. It is our resolve that we will not be defined by the culture of Babylon. It needs to be our resolve today. I will not be defined by the wickedness all around me, by the rebellion and idolatry that is everywhere. I will not be defined by Babylon. They were determined not to be allured. They were determined not to be enticed by Babylon. They were determined not to allow their affections and their devotion and their loyalty to God to be turned aside by Babylon. They were determined, we're not going to bow to peer pressure. We're going to continue to walk by faith. They were determined, and they guarded against the very short-sighted approach to life which sacrificed the eternal and the heavenly at the altar of the present and the earthly. They weren't deterred by these things. They did not sacrifice the spiritual on the altar of the carnal. And many do that every day. They sacrifice spiritual blessings on the altar of the carnal. Why do they do that? Goes back to a root system. Goes back to defining what is most important in our lives. Within these men, there was a heart for God. Nothing could change that. Within these men, there was a stirring from the Lord. For 3 years, they sat and were taught the ways of the Chaldeans. And during that time, their hearts stirred for God. I don't think there was ever a day in those classrooms where these men said, tell us some more. Oh, tell us some more. That sounds so good. Tell us some more. No, their hearts were stirred by God. They maintained an intense and deep interest in the Lord. The devil has organized it where Babylon seeks to withdraw our interest from God and place it in other areas of Babylon. They maintained a reverence and a passion and an excitement for the Lord. The Lord was a priority to them. And they were not shaped by, nor did they bow in any way to Babylon. These four individuals living in the midst of hatred, enmity, hostility toward God, living in the midst of the very embodiment of evil, living in the very turbulent and dangerous place, a place of spiritual famine, a place of great distress, yet they were courageous, and they continued to bear witness of God. And every time the opportunity came, they spoke of the God of heaven. They bore testimony, because they realized this is their purpose. And here we are, living in Babylon, but just like these four, we don't have to fit in with Babylon. The very moment you think you're starting to fit in, you'd better fall on your knees, because you're in a bad place. You shouldn't even want to fit in with Babylon. The more nuts the world thinks we are, the better off we are. We don't have to be identified with or by Babylon. And we can bear witness of God in Babylon, and we can live above Babylon. The message of Daniel, in closing, is illustrated in these four individuals. And the message is this: serving God in a godless society and a pagan culture. That's our calling. That's the calling of each one of us. To serve God in a godless society and a pagan culture. The message here is staying clean in a corrupt culture. That's our calling. That's our calling. The message here is staying strong in Satan's stronghold. That's our calling. That's our purpose in life. Living in Babylon, but not of Babylon. That's our calling. Persevering in the faith in the midst of unbelief. That's our calling. So the book of Daniel is an illustration that we can thrive in Babylon, and we can maintain an identity with God. For a child of God living in this world, and it's always been the case, you have cross culture. There's the culture of God, there's the culture of Babylon. You can't bring them together. They're at constant conflict. It's just like flesh and spirit in our bodies. Constant battle. You try to make peace. You try to unite your fleshly nature with your spiritual nature. It is impossible. It cannot be done. And so it is living in this world. We have to realize we're from a different place. Our thoughts are to be different. Our views are to be different. Everything about us is to be different. And if we're rooted to God, you know, there's something scary about people who have to do certain things to make themselves different. I'm talking about Christians. That shows great shallowness. You know what will make you different? Just being rooted to God. That will make you different than everybody around you. So here we are living in Babylon. But the encouraging news is God has placed us here, and it is to be our purpose to serve Him in Babylon. And God can be served in Babylon, and we can thrive spiritually in Babylon. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse song.